Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location. On the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA reporter and MMA junkie senior reporter, Mike Bond. Hope everyone out there is doing well on this crazy week. What a weird time in mixed martial arts. This UFC betting scandal story has kind of overtaken the sport a little bit, much overshadowed some of the other results on UFC Vegas 110 and just all the aftermath of Isaac Delgarian allegedly taking a dive in his fight with Yadier Delvalle. A lot to sift through when it comes to this, and I'm going to do so with UFC Hall of Famer Michael Bisping, who was on the call for the Delgarian Delvalle fight, has been close to the sport longer than most of us, some of us have been alive. So I don't think there's a better perspective to get from someone at the UFC who was there cage side when this all unfolded. As we sort through the immediate aftermath, Dana White's comments on the situation to TMZ on Tuesday, all important stuff to discuss. And then we will get into a little bit of a UFC 322 early preview, still over a week to go. We'll still have an official fight week episode for sure around that card, but too much to discuss in one podcast. So we had to spill it over to this week with Bisping, who is obviously as knowledgeable as anyone out there when it comes to these topics. So a lot of good stuff, a jam-packed show with Bisping, who reveals a little breaking news, maybe more than one piece actually on the show. So stay tuned for that. Lock in, enjoy the program, like, rate, subscribe, comment, all those different things to support the show. Means a lot. I will take a quick break and see you back here on the other side with Michael Bisping. Back here now on the Bonfire Podcast, the return of Michael Bisping, UFC Hall of Famer. One of our favorites, Mike. We love having you here. How are you doing?
Oh, one of your favorites? You're a good liar, Mike. You're going to look me right in the eye and lie to me just like that?
Of course I would not. It's all sincere truth. I try to catch you anytime we can, Mike, but I know you're so busy, you know, at these events and a lot of, you know, different jobs and stuff like that. And I know you've been busy all this year. Last time we spoke was in May and you were about to film some movies. You're on the road for weeks at a time. It's been a pretty busy year for you.
Yeah, no, it has. Yeah. It's been a very, very productive year. Very busy is an understatement, between the UFC stuff that obviously I'm very passionate about and commentating the fights. I love that. I'm very lucky. And then another, you know, some personal projects, some acting stuff and some other things outside of the UFC. So you put it all together, I'm very, very rarely home these days, but I'm not complaining. I'm a very lucky man. Yes, I travel a lot, multiple time zones and all the rest of it, but for a fighter, I'm living the post-fight dream. I really am, you know, so never, ever, ever complaining. I'm a very, very lucky man.
Yeah, and it's this week, actually, 8 years since your retirement month, I guess. I see all the clips popping up of you versus GSP, you know, in New York and everything. I know you had one fight after that, but I always consider GSP to be kind of the
fight. Yeah, that one doesn't really count. I wasn't really there mentally for that one. But yeah, no, I saw something pop up this week and I was like, because, you know, my eyesight's not too good. Even when I got a contact lens in, I can't really see. And I'm like, is that 8 years? Is that what that says? 8 years since I retired. It's crazy. I mean, since I retired, since I fought George St. Pierre, that has flown by. It literally feels like yesterday. 8 years. That is, yeah, that's mind blowing to me. It's been a good 8 years. It's been a great 8 years. You know, it's funny. It's funny because literally I was just boring you a second ago before we went live and, you know, I just had my workout and I was in the sauna and the ice bath and all the rest of it. And I got out of the shower. And my wife said something to me and we were talking about something, talking about work or whatever. And she said, yeah. but it's not as stressful for you these days. I'm like, what are you talking about? It's way more stressful. You know, I said, I loved being a fighter. I was having the time of my life. I was literally living the dream. You know, for anyone that wants to choose that life and really pursue it, and if you're good at it, it can be such an enriching life. I'm telling you, when I was fighting, I had the absolute time of my life. I was living the dream. So I live a good life now, but I said to my wife, I said, what are you talking about? Take me back to those days, please, for the love of God.
So I take it you miss it then, or do you feel like you've got past that stage?
Sorry, I'm eating some tea and toast. I'm absolutely starving, Mike. Yeah, I miss it. I miss it. Of course I do. And when I get in the gym and I get on the bag and I'm doing a little sparring or whatever, I'm like, I can still do this. I can still come back. I'm still in shape. But I've been there, done that. I've had that phase of my life. You know what I'm saying? So now I'm on to new challenges. You know, I love commentating the UFC. I'm truly blessed to be a part of that. Just finalizing, actually, a new 4-year deal with the company. So very, very pleased about that. So thank you to all the UFC staff and Dana and everyone there for, you know, extending that. Very, very grateful, certainly, as we go into this new era with Paramount TV. I'm very, very lucky. But sorry, what was the question? I went off on a tangent there.
No, it was just, do you miss it or do you feel like you've gotten over those feelings?
Yeah. I mean, look, listen, I still like to compete. I'm still very competitive, but I'm sorry. I apologize about the toast. I'm on to new challenges these days, you know? So, I'm still trying to figure out what those are. I'm doing a little bit of acting stuff. I did a couple of movies this year, got some other stuff coming up as well. First and foremost, I commentate the UFC. The UFC and mixed martial arts is what's given me my life, as well as obviously my wife and kids, but I'm a mixed martial artist first. I always will be. And that's my bread and butter.
Yeah, and one of those acting projects you mentioned, I believe, is getting into the post-production finalization stage with Atlas King with Cuba Gooding Jr. That sounds like a pretty incredible project. Do you know, like, when's that going to be released? When are you going to be able to start promoting it? All that type of stuff.
Yeah, very, very soon. I actually went to a screening last week with a lot of international buyers for the film. Obviously, myself and a group called Punch It Films, we put the project together. It was written and directed by Nika Agashvili. And then myself and three other partners, we started a production company, created Atlas King. I saw it for the first time last week in full, like the finished version. It's going to blow a lot of people away. Cuba Gooding Jr. was phenomenal to work with, and it's come out really, really good, far better than I ever hoped. And I think, there's my sister. It'll probably come out early next year is what I'm led to believe. So very, very early next year, I'll probably be driving people crazy with clips on social media and all the rest of it. But yeah, stay tuned. Atlas King, you're going to want to see it.
That's very cool. Yeah, the IMDb description says an ex-fighter comes home to bury his friend and join forces with his godson to plot a heist targeting an MMA or a mob boss. So this isn't an MMA movie, right? It's just like the character is an ex-fighter.
Yeah, sure. It's not an MMA movie per se. No, it is based around someone that was a former underground MMA style fighter that got himself in trouble with some gangsters, was shot. He had to leave the country, go back to England for 10 years. And then he comes back to bury his father figure, his mentor, and he finds out that his son is in the same trouble as the people that my character was in trouble with. So I can't just disappear. I've got to save the day. I've got to go to war and sort things out. So that's a very, very loose gist of the film. But certainly centered around MMA. And there's a lot of familiar faces in there. People like Giga Chikadze. There's Jake Ellenberger in there as well, doing some great work. A lot of great fight scenes, a lot of great action, heist, drama. You know, yeah, it's going to be good, man. It's going to blow a lot of people away.
Very cool. I'm stoked to see that. That's awesome, man. Congrats. Well, good things happening. And Mike, I guess we'll get on to it now. When I texted you last week about coming on, it was like, you know, let's preview some of the best fights happening for the rest of the year, like getting excited about these final 2 months, two big pay-per-views, the last two pay-per-views. And then we get hit with, you know, probably the biggest MMA story of the year. Had to change plans a little bit. We will talk about UFC 322. But
Is it really the biggest story of the year? I don't know.
Feels
if it
like
is.
It right now.
I think this is getting blown way out of proportion.
Okay, so obviously we're talking about the Isaac Delgarian kind of betting scandal. You did a great job kind of reacting to it immediately with Paul Felder on your Monday show, believe you me. So people who want to see kind of the immediate reaction, go watch that. But things have evolved a little bit since then. We finally got Dana White on Tuesday night. He came out and did the interview, TMZ, kind of addressing this for the first time. My biggest takeaway, and you can give me your thought, was him basically admitting that they knew about this beforehand. They spoke to Isaac and his team and his coaches and everything, tried to figure out if there was any foul play going on. He assured them not. And then the fight happened. And then, you know, he immediately calls the FBI afterwards. I guess the big question people are wondering now is, given that, given the conversation they had, should they have pulled the fight and not allowed to happen, even with Isaac's reassurance?
Yeah, well, you kind of misspoke there. You said that they knew about it beforehand. They didn't. They didn't.
They knew about irregular betting activity. Sorry, that's
they knew about irregular betting activity. So they went and spoke to him, and they looked him in the eye and spoke to him face to face, and spoke to his lawyer as well, and asked him, and they convinced him. Said, "No, what are you talking about? This is crazy. I wasn't there, but I'm, you know, I'm paraphrasing." So they felt confident that this was just unusual activity in the betting lines, and went ahead. And then when they saw the first round finish, the way that the fight went down, they thought, hold on a minute, this all looks a little suspect. And from what I saw, you probably saw the same clip that I saw from Dana. They called the FBI, you know, and took the appropriate action. What more do you want to say? I mean, it's kind of crazy that Isaac Dulgarian would do that. It is insane. We don't know the circumstances or whatever. It's been fully investigated, so I'm sure the truth will come out eventually. But such an idiot, you know, a very, very promising young man, a great fighter, excellent wrestling pedigree, and now he's just thrown away his career completely. And we don't know the ins and outs. We don't know if there's some shady characters. This is what me and Paul were talking about around mixed martial arts and combat sports. There is some people, some unsavory characters. I feel as the sport has got much more professional these days, it's kind of weeded out a lot of those people, and it's mainly real, true professionals and managers involved. But who knows? Maybe he had some personal troubles. Maybe some people from his old neighborhood. I don't know too much about Isaac Dulgarian other than watching his fights and commentating. So he made a massive mistake, and he's going to pay. Simple as that. He's going to pay the consequences.
Yeah, and this was part of Dana's quote here. The fight plays out by a first-round finish, rear naked choke. Literally, the first thing we did was call the FBI. Fight fixing is absolutely insane. I'm not saying this kid's guilty. There's no proof that he's done this yet, but I can tell you that it's not looking good. So, that's a pretty damning statement from Dana. Again, like it seems like the walls are closing in a bit. But, yeah, I wonder if this comes up again next time, if there is, you know, flagged for irregular betting activity. Do they just pull the fight and be like, hey, you know, we reschedule it for next week or something, and we'll look into this and see if there's anything weird going on. Like, I wonder if this was a teachable moment, and you know, if this
I forget the name of the company they said that they use to
I360, I believe it's
called. So they have a whole, I mean, I commentate the UFC. I've been around the company now. You know, in January, it'll be 20 years as a part of the UFC, which is insane, which is a nice little milestone for me because I do value that. And I'd never heard that they have this company that's well-respected, that's one of the world leaders in monitoring this kind of stuff, you know. So clearly, they're doing everything they can to ensure that this stuff doesn't happen. But, you know, I guess in any walk of life, you know, that's why I said, is it really that big of a story that there's people that are in that are what's the word I'm looking for? They're motivated to cheat, to bend the rules, just like taking steroids to take the shortcut in life. You know what I'm saying? Like somebody works at a bank, there might be an inside job. I'm not saying this is a regular thing, but we've heard about that. You know what I'm saying? That kind of stuff. So for one person to do that, and yeah, we had the James Krause thing, when was that, a couple of years ago and stuff, which apparently is still being investigated. Mm-hmm. That was a big story at the time. It just says about this guy, Isaac Dulgarian. I don't want to speak too much because, as Dana even said there, they don't know for sure.
Yep.
But if he did, you know, you got to have more faith in yourself. And we don't understand the full circumstances, but do you believe in yourself or not? You know, is that the path you want to take in life? He took the easy option. It's allegedly took the easy option. Who knows? Maybe we'll all be apologizing, but maybe not. Probably not.
perhaps. Yeah. And just talking about like this type of stuff in theory, you know, not to any specific individual, but what is the upside on the back of end of this, right? Because I imagine, you know, he is cut from the UFC. Mark Montoya, Factory X coach, came out and said, you know, he's no longer associated with the team. I don't know if he'll ever fight again. And I imagine, you know, his purse is being withheld currently by the Nevada Commission. And then I imagine all his bank accounts, all his income for the next however long is going to be closely monitored by the FBI. So even if you did do this, and again, all allegedly, I don't think you're getting the money you were probably promised to try to do this, because it'll all be suspicious. So like, where is the upside? You've ruined your life, your career, and you're not even going to get probably the money out of it.
Yeah, no. It's just foolish, isn't it? He chose not to bet on himself and take the easy way out, allegedly, again. Yes. We can just go over the same points over and over again, but it's just so foolish, it's so dumb, it's so stupid, it's so short-sighted. Unless something comes out and there was like some really serious people involved that had a gun to his wife's head or something like that. I don't know if the guy's married, but you know what I'm saying. I don't mean to be flippant about it. Obviously, it's a very serious situation and the UFC are going to act accordingly. Very unfortunate.
Yeah. Last point on this. When you think back to commentating that fight on Saturday, like, does it make you think differently about it, or like rethink things that you had seen there from cage side? Because I know Daniel Cormier told Ariel.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Cobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98, because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
Hawani, like, we didn't know anything about this while calling the fight. We didn't find out till, you know, the aftermath. I think you said that on your pod when you guys were on the car to the airport or whatever. But does it make you rethink some of the stuff on Saturday? And are you glad that no one mentioned this to you, because it probably would have altered your commentary, I imagine.
Yeah. I guess I would have liked to have known. I would have kept an eye out for things. But I'll be honest, at the time, I was just like, because I know Isaac Dulgarian in his former fights has been a very, very good wrestler. Now, Yadier Davai, the Cuban fella that he fought, is an absolute monster. He's a black belt in BJJ. He's got really good judo. He's a knockout artist, and he's massive for the weight class. So I remember at the time just thinking, holy cow, you know, Yadier Davai is that good. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, holy cow, look at this. He took the back very easily. He stopped the takedown, took the back and choked him out in the first round. This kid must be great. And now, obviously, when all this comes to light, maybe it's less impressive. But yeah, I didn't know anything about it. And at the time, I just remember thinking Del Valle is the real deal. And he is the real deal. And he does have a bright future. So that still, it shouldn't reflect negatively on him. This is all on Isaac Dulgarian. Again, allegedly.
Yeah, poor Yadier. Imagine like feeling like he got that great win, huge underdog, and everyone's being like,
"Yeah, hey, a win's a win. You'll take it. You'll take it."
Yeah, for real. I just feel.
Hey, listen, I had to work my ass off for some of my wins and coming out black and blue. If someone wanted to roll over, sometimes I'll take it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, more to come on this. Obviously, we'll see. It was kind of, you know, the last time with the Kraus thing, it's a big wave in the first like week, then it's kind of dead time a little bit. But we'll see if more statements or more things come out sooner than that, or if it's kind of quiet for the next couple of years, because this stuff can obviously drag out for a very long time, but something to monitor for sure. Before we move on to UFC 322, Mike, have you heard from Tom Aspinall at all? Do you know how he's doing in the wake of this fight?
I don't know. I haven't seen him. I haven't heard anything from him. I'm assuming that things are better now. Otherwise, we would have had an update, I'm sure. If things were still not improving, I'm sure we would know about that, and I'm sure he would have been very vocal about that. So one would assume, you know, listen, it's a hard situation. The man's the champion of the world. He goes out there, he gets a vicious eye poke, and then, you know, trolls online, you know, the Twitter fan base is extremely toxic. Everybody has an opinion, you know, so he's probably just laying low for a little bit. You know, the reality of the situation is he didn't do anything wrong. He was poked in the eye. You know, he was poked in the eye. Could he have continued? Only he knows that. Maybe he could, maybe he couldn't, right? And it just doesn't help his case, because Wilder Cortez Acosta goes out Saturday night, gets poked in the eye by Tom's teammate. It's just the craziest coincidence ever. You know, and it really is. And for anyone that wants to beyond that path of talking crap about Tom. You know, this just gives them more ammunition. The end of the day, he was poked badly in the eye. It should have been on Cyril Garn. I believe Cyril Garn didn't do it on purpose. You know, we've got to give him the benefit of the doubt. But he did poke him in the eye, you know. So I assume Tom's doing well now. And hopefully we get news of the rematch coming up soon.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything you said. Putting the onus on him is crazy. If they went back and resumed it, it wouldn't be a fair fight anymore. So, like, what are we doing here for the heavyweight title?
Yeah, and listen, fair play to Wilder Cortez Acosta. I mean, the man's a warrior, right? Everybody respects that. Of course they do. You know, because he was still in a lot of pain. He says, no, I'm good to fight. He knocks the guy out. He puts Ante Delia to sleep with a beautiful counter right hand after eating a jab. And Ante Delia is a great guy as well. And again, it just looks bad for him because he was like, oh, I've had 33 pro fights and never poked anyone in the eye. And then he pokes him in the eye. It's just like, but that's life, isn't it? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You've always got to be careful because whatever you say is going to come back and bite you in the ass at some point.
For real.
Bit me in the ass many a time. It's just one of those things, man. But Cortez Acosta, fair play. You know, that man is an animal. He was still in a lot of pain and he chose to fight on. He chose that. Now, I guess it was a little different. Tom's the champion of the world. He's fighting Cyril Garn. Could he have continued? Only he knows that. He said he couldn't see. We've got to take that at face value.
Yep, I agree. Okay, let's get into UFC 322 here because I honestly can't wait for this card next week in New York. It's so good, top to bottom. Main card is incredible. I got kind of a trio of storylines I want to hit you here with about this card. So let's start off with the women's title fight. Zhang Wali moving up to challenge Valentina Shevchenko for the women's flyweight title. This one's obviously hugely important, but who do you feel like can't afford the loss more here, right? Like, whose legacy would be more damaged by a defeat here? Is it Wali taking the risk of moving up, or Shevchenko, you know, dropping her belt to the champion coming up from a lower division?
Yeah, the pressure's always on the bigger woman or guy. Like when I defended against George 8 years ago, you know, he was the welterweight coming up to middleweight, you know. So on paper, casual fans are like, yeah, he got beaten by the smaller guy. So I guess in that regard, you could say that Shevchenko's under a little bit of pressure here. The reality is that Zhang Weili is a phenomenal fighter. Right, she is phenomenal. She's still in a prime. She hasn't taken too much damage. She can do it all, and she truly believes in herself. And she wants to be great, and she feels like she's done everything she can at strawweight, and wants to go on to bigger challenges. And that's just incredible. When you look at the matchup, you could argue that maybe Valentina's the more polished striker, but Zhang Weili can compete, and she is a ferocious competitor. So it's going to be a phenomenal fight. And as soon as I heard about this, I was like, oh yeah, that's money right there. So yeah, best of luck to both ladies.
Yeah, one of the best women's MMA fights ever. I mean, I don't know if we've ever had one versus two pound for pound. I don't know what Amanda Nunes and Chris Cyborg were at the time when they fought, but like, this is pretty high up there in terms of, you know,
we had Shevchenko versus Nunes, right? A couple of times.
Yeah. So I'm not sure. I don't know if they were ranked 1 and 2 pound for pound at that time though. So that might be it's pretty crazy to come through.
Who was ranked number one? Nunes was bantamweight champ. Shevchenko was the flyweight champ.
It wasn't at that point. When they fought, she was still just in the bantamweight. She hadn't dropped to flyweight yet, so she had done none of her flyweight work.
Oh, really? Shevchenko?
Yeah. Because she, I think that was the second fight is what kind of prompted her to drop down.
Okay. We'll see. I stand corrected. You know, I haven't done my research like you have. I'm not looking at a fight card. I'm not trying to catch you out, Mike Bone. But if that's the game we're playing, I can pull some shit up and I'll make mincemeat out of you, bro.
No. I'm just saying. But this has obviously got a lot of tentacles to it. I mean, Kayla Harrison is out there calling out Shevchenko, saying if she wins this fight, I want to face her at the White House, do like a Rocky style USA versus Russia type thing. I actually interviewed Valentina a couple hours ago and asked her about that. She did seem interested, but said, like, you know, classic herself, we'll talk about it after the fight. I'm focused on this one.
Yeah, all fighters say I'm only focused on this fight. You know, they all like to give those kind of answers.
Fair play in this situation.
But you know what? I mean, listen, if Kayla Harrison, and I assume, and this is, you know, assumption at its finest, but given the fact that Kayla Harrison was at the White House and there was a lot of videos of her there kind of in the early stages, I would assume she's going to be on that card. She's an American champion. She's a fantastic champion and a great fighter and the bantamweight champ. So Yeah, if she wants Shevchenko, if Shevchenko can beat Weili Zhang or Zhang Weili, and that's a big if. It's not a given. You know, look at me, an old Georgie boy, even though I only had one eye and I tore all the cartilage in my ribs a week before. You know, if she can beat Zhang Weili, then that would be a tremendous fight, absolutely. And if Kayla's calling for it, we just might see that, yeah. And as you say, there is the kind of the Rocky connotations, the Rocky IV stuff. Yes, yeah, so that's cool. I like it. Yeah.
Is Kayla too big for Valentina, though, you think?
Kayla's probably too big for a lot of women.
Well, like that one feels big size difference.
Yeah, but you never know. You know, Shevchenko's great on the feet. She's very experienced. She's been in there with some world-class competition one after the other. Yeah, of course, she's going to give up a massive size difference. But in terms of, you know, look at Zhang Weili. She's trying to become a two-weight division champion. That would be another opportunity for Valentina Shevchenko to do something incredible, to become a two-weight division champion and also to compete at the White House. And we know that everyone wants to fight on the White House. Even John Jones now, after retiring and saying that he's done, now he's coming back and he wants to fight on the White House. Everyone's putting their hand up. And if it's actually a champion calling out someone else to fight on the White House, then yeah, I mean, I'd take that opportunity if it was offered.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with Amanda and Kayla first and foremost. I think that might be in the early portion of the year, January or February, one of those first Paramount cards. So yeah. Some big fights happening in women's MMA finally. We need it. Next storyline here, UFC 322, big night for the welterweights, obviously outside of the championship though. But who do you think of the contenders on the undercard there, which welterweight needs the win the most? Sean Brady, Michael Morales, Leon Edwards, or Carlos Prochaska?
All right, let me just bring up the fight card so I can be a little bit more educated, because I'm just, I'm flying in the dark here. UFC 322 Wiki. Let me have a look at the fight card. So what was the question? Which contender needs the win the most?
Yeah.
I mean, look, listen, as much as I love my UK brethren, Leon Edwards needs to win here. And it's a really tough fight. I mean, Leon was flying high. He beat Kamaru two times in a row, beats Colby, and then loses to Bilal Muhammad. You know, comes back, loses to Sean Brady. There's no shame in that. Styles make fights. Sean Brady's an incredible fighter. Bilal Muhammad was flying high and was awesome as well. But after going on a win streak like that and losing two in a row, of course, I'm sure Rocky would agree. You know, he's got to get a win here. The problem is that he's taking on Carlos Prates, a guy that's going to play the game that Leon wants to play. But the man's, you know, the man's flying high. He's a knockout artist. Everyone loves Carlos Prates. And this is the kind of fight where we're going to see Rocky. He's going to bite down on his mouthpiece because he ain't going to have to struggle to find Carlos Prates. Carlos Prates is going to go right at him. And hopefully we're all in for some fun.
Yeah, I think I had a feeling you were going to say Leon there. I think I'll make the argument for Carlos Prates, actually. I feel like he needs to get one back for Fighting Nerds. They've had a little bit of a slump here. And then also, like, he kind of had a big fight opportunity against Ian.
Yeah, nah.
Well for him, and he needs
disagree. Disagree. Yeah, listen, the Fighting Nerds have lost a few along the way. You know, that's life, right? When you've got a team of a lot of high-profile guys, it's only natural that you're going to lose a few fights along the way. And of course, you know, there's a lot of haters online. Oh, look at the Fighting Nerds. Kyle lost and then Maurizio Hufi lost. You know, as you climb the ladder and you get to the elite competition, that will start to happen. But the point I was going to make about Carlos Prates, yeah, he wants to represent his team. Great. First and foremost, this is an individual sport. He's representing himself. Yeah, great Brazil. Great the Fighting Nerds. He cares about himself, his path, his legacy, right? His bank account. That's what he's fighting for. Secondary, yeah, your team, your country, you know, and all the rest of it. But he's only concerned, and this is the way it should be. You're a fighter, right? And none of the team are going to be there. None of them are in there in the octagon taking the lumps. They're not getting kicked in the head. They're not getting choked up. Yeah, you want to represent them. You want to be a good teammate and they all love one another. Fantastic. But he's representing himself. So I don't feel like he's under that much pressure. Leon Edwards is. Sean Brady. I mean, Sean Brady is under a little bit of pressure because he's right there on the cusp of a title fight and he's taking on Michael Morales, this young, undefeated kid. So that's a tremendous matchup as well. It's a stylistic matchup. You know, Morales is a great striker. Sean Brady, as we know, is a tremendous grappler of the highest level. But when you look at Sean Brady, this is a guy that's, you know, 18-1, the only loss to Bilal Muhammad. Outside of that, the man's flying high. He loses now. Maybe he loses a bit of momentum. So there's a lot of high-stake matchups on the undercard. So, yeah, it's a great card.
Yeah, and I guess just my point on Carlos too is like he seemed like he was on such a run there. They were talking about putting him into the welterweight title fight with Bilal in May, didn't get that spot, the Shavkat fight in December, and then he lost to Ian. And I feel like if he loses to this one, we might just start looking at more of like this guy's an action fighter and like a top guy, but is he top three, top four? So that was just more.
Yeah,
Leon's been there, done that, all that stuff. So that was just my kind of perspective. And I knew you were going to pick Leon, so I just want a conflicting opinion here, Mike. This is how we
of course. It. Hey, go for it. I could have. Unless you pick whoever you want, man. I've got no skin in this game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've got no dog in this race. They're all under pressure. The reality is that every single time when you're a fighter, you're only as good as your last fight. And as the sport is getting more and more popular and more people pour onto Twitter and they start filling your inbox with DMs and you suck and all the rest of it, you're only as good as your last fight. So whether it was a win or a loss, your next fight coming up is the most important because it's an opportunity to show the world what you're capable of. If you've lost a few, it's an opportunity to say, hey, look, listen, don't forget about me yet. Look at what I'm still capable of, you know? And if you're winning, again, it's like, listen, I'm marching towards a title fight. Please consider me for a shot. You're always under pressure. You're only as good as your last fight.
This episode of the Bonfire Podcast is brought to you by MyBookie. For all your UFC and mixed martial arts betting needs, use mybookie.ag. Sign up with the code word BON, B-O-H-N, for a special first-time player bonus. They have straight lines, money lines, odds, props, parlays, everything you need to enhance your UFC betting experience. Use MyBookie and make sure to bet responsibly. Do you think all four of these guys are kind of praying that Jack Della Maddalena beats Islam in the main event just because it would kind of keep order in the division? If Islam wins, it opens up the Ilya questions and other type of things that could be off the radar. Like, do all these guys, for their career hopes and getting to that belt, are they hoping for Jack here?
Yeah, more than likely. More than likely, because it would... I mean, I don't know what Islam Makhachev's intentions are. You know, he's probably going to stay at welterweight and defend welterweight. I believe so. He said he has no intention of going back down to 155. Yeah. However, there is the Ilya Topuria narrative and the storyline between those two. And I'm sure we as MMA fans would all love to see that. However, they probably want order to restore a welterweight, defend the strap, and then they'll get a shot. Because you never know what's going to happen if Islam becomes the champ. And for Islam, it is a tough fight. This is not an easy matchup. You know, Jack Della Maddalena, the way that he beat Bilal Muhammad, you know, that is, and I've said this multiple times, it's the perfect warm-up fight. If you're going to fight Islam Makhachev, fight Bilal Muhammad before that, you know, because he trains with them. He's got a similar style. He might be bigger. He might be stronger. You know, the cardio's off the chain, you know, all the rest of it, you know, and Bilal was doing great things. And he made it look, with respect to Bilal, relatively easy. You know, he boxed his head off, beautiful footwork, excellent takedown defense. On the rare occasion he was taken down, he got back to his feet pretty quickly. You know, so it's a perfect warm-up fight to go up against Islam Makhachev. Now, Islam is a different animal. He's a different monster to Bilal Muhammad. But still, you see the points that I'm making.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we'll just get right into that. I mean, that was my final point here on the show. If Islam wins this fight, becomes the 11th fighter in UFC history to win titles in two weight classes, or maybe 12th if Zhang Weili wins earlier in the night, he would tie Anderson Silva's record for the longest winning streak in UFC history at 16. Like, what are the conversations about Islam's place among the all-time greats going to be if he wins this fight? I mean, what he's doing is very special. Finished, I think, 10 of his last 11 opponents as well.
Yeah, of course. And only one loss on the record, you know, which is phenomenal.
10 years ago.
I think I'm right in saying this, the most successful lightweight ever, defended the belt 4 times.
Yep.
The record previously was 3, you know, so that's phenomenal. And we all know about the lightweight division and how stacked that is. I mean, he's defended the belt 4 times, you know, he's, from what I understand, quite a simple man, you know, so, you know, be great, step up to another weight class, take out someone else, you know, Madison Square Garden. These are the moments that as a fighter, we live for, these kind of super fight moments, you know. Of course, you know, he's making a tremendous living. He doesn't want to do this forever. And he can go back to his farm in Dagestan and he can live a nice, simple life and know that he's been there, done that, and tested himself. That's what we want to do as fighters. That's why a lot of the time, and this is why I respect Islam doing it now, when he's defended the belt four times. He's defended the belt four times, the lightweight division. He's kind of gone through all the big stars there. Okay, let's go up to welterweight. Let's try something new. Let's try and do something that's never been done. Whereas a lot of the time we see fighters, they instantly become the champ and they want to defend, they want to challenge for another belt in another weight class because there's no risk there. There's no risk. If you lose, you're still the champ at 155 or whatever weight class it is. He's done it. He's defended the belt four times. He's proven that he was the legitimate best fighter at 155 pounds on planet Earth. And he's done that five times, won the belt and then defended it four times. And now he said, right, I've done that. I've clearly proven that at 155, I'm the man. Let's see if I can do it at 170. It's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, if I said to you the greatest fighters in MMA history, the kind of the GOAT list, George St. Pierre, John Jones, Demetrius Johnson, Anderson Silva, if when I listed that off with a win here, I said Islam Makhachev, would that feel right to you or would that feel too soon?
See, the thing is it doesn't sound right. And maybe I'm being a little bit, maybe I'm not giving him his credit there. I'm just looking at his record here because, you know, when you look at Anderson Silva, his second fight in the UFC, he became the champ. Mm-hmm. He beat Rich Franklin and then he beat Chris Lieben, and then he beat Rich Franklin to become the champion. So the majority of those 16 wins were title defenses. Yeah. You know, so that's a little different. When you talk about John Jones, you know, there's a lot of title defenses in there as well. Same with George St. Pierre. I'm certainly not critiquing Islam Makhachev's career. I'm not nitpicking and discrediting it at all. But when you're talking about, sure, Anderson Silva went up to light heavyweight twice against Forrest Griffin and forget the other guy's name. There was
Stephen James Bonner, Irvin. James Irvin. He fought
James Irvin, Stephen Bonner, and Forrest Griffin. So there was three, yeah. You know, so there's probably 12 title defenses in there, or 11 or 12 title defenses. So it's a little bit different, but yeah, sure. I mean, listen, if you're defending belts, if you're becoming a two-weight division champion and on paper the numbers are equal, then of course the man deserves to be held in that regard.
Yeah, that was just my question. I mean, again, you say like we're nitpicking in a very positive way. Like we're having a discussion of this, is he one of the five greatest fighters to ever compete in the sport?
Yeah. I'm literally thinking out loud. I'm looking at his record and you're seeing Moicano, Dustin Poirier, Volkanovski twice in a row, Charles Oliveira. And then if you were a critic, then you start talking about Bobby Green. There's Dan Hooker, who's a tremendous fighter. Drew Dober, Davey Hamosh, Armin Sarukian. You know what I'm saying? So that hasn't aged bad. So I mean, listen, if he gets the job done, I think without question, he deserves to be in that conversation.
Yeah, and dude, let alone if he can defend that belt a couple times against a Sean Brady, against a Shavkat, against any of these super high-level welterweights, like I think that would kind of push his legacy over the edge. And I think we're having conversations about him being top three or number one.
Without a shadow of a doubt. If he can beat Jack, and again, it's a big if. I'm not sure what the odds are on that fight. But if he can beat Jack and go on a run and defend it two or three times, it's insane.
Yeah. Well, the odds currently from my bookie has Makhachev -265 and JDM +200 as the champion. Does that feel accurate to you, or does that seem a little off?
I mean, is that Makhachev? He's got one loss on his record and he was knocked out against Adriano Martins and he got caught very, very early in the fight. And listen, you know, that's the nature of the beast. That's why this sport is so great, because unexpected things happen all the time, you know. But it still feels a little disrespectful to Jack Della Maddalena. You know, when you look at Jack, I think he lost his first two fights. Since then, undefeated. He's big. He's a big guy. He's about my height or so, 6 foot, 6 foot one. He's a true welterweight. He can box, man. His boxing is beautiful. Probably the best boxing in all the UFC. His takedown defense is very, very strong. And his footwork is just incredible to watch. And it's the perfect kind of footwork that you need to pivot and angle and stay away from the fence, you know. And he's not going to throw too many kicks either because of the boxing style, which is going to be key in this matchup as well. So, yes, I understand Islam being the big favorite, but still, you know, if I was a betting man, and I'm not, because we can't bet on fights, to go back to the start of the podcast, might be worth throwing a few dollars on Jack Della Maddalena if you've got it to spare.
Well, I'll put you on the spot because you're not calling these fights and I rarely get to ask you this. Do you think Jack wins or do you think Islam pulls this off?
Again, you know, it's a coin toss for me. I think Islam has a very, very good shot. I think Jack Della Maddalena has a very good shot. And I know I'm kind of sitting on the fence, but this is kind of how I see this fight. It all depends. I mean, there's a reason generally why fighters commit to a weight class. You know what I'm saying? And for the longest time, how old is Islam? He's 34 years old. Throughout the entirety of his combat sports career, when he was growing up, when he was doing combat sambo and then transitioning to MMA, he's always been this weight class. And that's been for a reason. And there are weight classes for a reason, because the guys are bigger and stronger and you don't have as much success when you're the smaller man. You know, so, and who knows, maybe his technique is that great. And on the feet, Jack's got an advantage. That's just a fact. In the grappling department, Islam has an advantage. That's also a fact. But then you start to look at the intangibles. You start to look into how bad does someone want it? How hard have they trained? You know, what is their kind of, you know, their fighting spirit, for want of a better, a cheesy line? But it's true, man. What makes them tick? Who are they? You know, and how badly are they going to prepare? Then you look into the fact that he trains with Habib, you know, and you know they're going to leave no stone unturned. But Jack Della Maddalena isn't there by accident. And that's what this makes this such an incredible fight. Because honestly, I could make a choice either way. And it would literally be a coin toss.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. Islam told me right when he vacated the belt that he was having trouble putting on the weight and keeping it on, moving up to welterweight. But now at the end of camp, he's talking about how he's using creatine for the first time and he feels he's fully filled out and like feels so much better without cutting the weight. But to your point, that weight cut for some guys does give you that edge, makes you train a certain way, all that stuff. Like even taking your foot slightly off the gas can change things when you don't have that in the back of your mind.
Yeah, but the creatine's a good shout. You know, that is going to make you a little bit heavier. It's going to make you stronger. It's going to make you more explosive. And it's going to make your brain and cognitive function way better as well, they're saying these days as well. Did you know that when you're flying around the world and you're dealing with jet lag, creatine helps make up for lost sleep? So I was just out in Abu Dhabi. I went to the store, bought some creatine, and I was flying.
There you go. If any creatine companies out there want to sponsor the pod, get on here.
Come on, let's go. Never mind that. Sponsor my podcast.
Yeah, there you go. Group duo here. Well, this was a nice crossover, Mike. I appreciate having a little Believe You Me here. I think we're going to have Paul on towards the end of the year to do something.
Oh,
good.
Really? Nice.
Both of you guys, and love the show and love everything that you're doing. It means a lot. You're a credit to the MMA community. I'm very happy. Congrats again on this four-year deal. Does that start in January? Like you obviously feel comfort in the Paramount era now. I've had a lot of people on who are uncertain of the future.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't had too many discussions. I just know, as I say, it's not signed and sealed just yet, but it will be very soon. You know, we're just finalizing the agreement. So I'm extremely grateful. I said that to Dana himself, because for me personally, being involved with this company and this sport, which has given me so much, and you know, there might be a lot of people out there go, oh, company man. It's like, what are you talking about? This is the finest MMA promotion on the planet by far, okay? And I have committed 20 years of, well, no, probably, in fact, a lifetime doing martial arts and 20 years with this company. And it's just, it's changed my life in so many ways, you know? And even now that I commentate, I still get to be around it. That's why when you said before, do you miss the sport? I'm still around the sport. So I don't need to worry about being a fighter anymore, because now this sport has changed my life and given me so much, and I'm still involved. If I wasn't commentating, I wasn't still making a living as well, of course, that's always the big thing for fighters when they don't have money coming in. You know, they're like, right, well, I guess I'll come out of retirement. I'll find a fight, you know, so I don't have to do that. But I'm also still involved. And that is more important than the financial side, because this is what I've dedicated my life to. You know, and studying mixed martial arts and watching fighters and training myself. And you know, there will be a phase in my life where I start coaching fighters as well, but I'm not quite ready for that yet, because you got to be selfless as a coach. But to still be involved with this sport after so many years, I'm blessed. I'm a very, very lucky man.
Yeah. Love it, Mike. I appreciate your time as always. I'm going to take a quick break and be right back to wrap things up. And that does it for another edition of the Bonfire Podcast. Thank you so much to Michael for his time. That was great stuff, as always. He's the man. one of our favorites. We weren't joking when we tell him that. That's not just lip service for Bisping. He is truly one of the goats and one of my favorite people that I've had a relationship with in this industry over the past however long I've been doing this, almost 15 years now. Crazy times. I appreciate everyone tuning in. Appreciate the support. And until next week, UFC 322. It's going to be amazing. I'll be there in New York. See you back here by the bonfire.
You think boots, you think Ariat. You think comfort from day one and durability to day 1,000. You think steel toes on the job, square toes on the dance floor, with style that owns a Saturday night and still looks sharp enough for Sunday dinner. And through every mile and every moment, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, turn bad ideas into better stories, and still punch the clock come Monday morning. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat boots at Ariat.com or a retailer near you. We know what you're thinking. I just want jeans that look great, feel great, and hold up. At Ariat, we've been doing some thinking too. We're thinking about fit that moves with you, no matter where the ride takes you. Durability that stands up to hard work, harder play, and comfort that never quits. And all this thinking, it's really just about more living. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat jeans at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.